Hello, welcome along to the seventh episode of the Let's Get Running podcast. Thanks for joining us. My name's Sean. I am the host. And if you're anything like me, you're getting really excited for the forthcoming Rio Olympics. I think there's 50 days to go as of Thursday. And there's loads of exciting stuff to look forward to. Usain Bolt's run really well an early season race, which is encouraging. Be good to see him smash Gatlin again this summer. Ross Millington, the 10,000 metre runner who we talked about in previous shows, he has now qualified for the Olympics. He ran 27.55 in a race in Holland last week, which is really great for him. And lots of British athletes are gearing up for the trials, and there should be some really exciting racing over there in Birmingham. What isn't so encouraging, though, is a further wider report into Russian compliance with anti-doping measures, which show not a lot has changed in the last 6 months, unfortunately. So on this week's show, we have an interview with something of an anti-doping expert. His name's Jake Shelley. He's a British 5,000 metre runner based out in the US. And this summer, he became something of an anti-doping star following his article about meldonium, following Maria Sharapova's drugs ban. We talk about his thoughts about the current state of athletics, his own training, living out in the US, one of the biggest current stars in US athletics, Boris Berian, and his plans for the future. All sounds very exciting. Hope you enjoy. So what was your initial motivation for taking up distance running?
Well, like I was saying, I've just listened to your interview with Johnny Davis, and I think I've got a similar story in that I was a big footballer. And then my older sister got into running from the school sports, whatever. So and then I did the school cross country. And it's quite good in my area in North London. It's quite good that the Shaftesbury sort of send out the scouts, all the old boys go around and watch the school races. And then if you do well, they'll come and tell you when the training is. And you just go down on a Tuesday and Thursday night. So that's how I initially got into it. It's just
a great setup there, isn't it,
Shaftesbury? It really is, yeah. Not much of the talent slips through the net in Barnet, I don't think, because everyone does the school races. And then if you do well in the school races, you're encouraged to join a club. So it's a good system. Yeah, and I wasn't very good at first, actually. I wasn't very good at all. I was not even the best runner at my school. And then I just had a growth spurt, and I got way bigger and I got way faster. And that was when I actually started to enjoy it. And because, you know, being good at stuff is way more fun. Yeah. So I think when I was 14, I was rubbish. And then when I was 15, I ran like 2 flat for 800 and 405 or something, and I sort of got qualified for the English schools, and I just got really into it, you know, because there's all those next steps, like, right, you can qualify for the English schools now if you run this time, and then that's quite addictive, you know, seeing how you compare to a bigger and bigger area of people. So
yeah,
I caught the bug at that point.
And you've been out in the you're in the UK at the moment, but you've lived in the US for the last few years. How did that come about?
So I went to university in England first. I went to the University of Oxford. And actually, at that time, we had the best group that Oxford University's had in a long, long time. And I was directly inspired to go to America by two of my closest friends who also went to Oxford with me at the same time. So Andy Hayes is in the school year above me, and he was in the year above me at Oxford. And he was a really good runner. He was one of the best university runners at that time. And he decided to go to America. Another friend of mine, Luke, went to New Mexico. And then the year after Luke, I went to New Mexico as well. So for 3 years, there were, you know, 3 consecutive years, we all went out to America. And Andy was really the one who got that started. He, like, contacted, like, 100 coaches in America or something. And from that, he sort of passed on to us which ones might be interested in having Brits. And then, yeah, like I said, Luke Caldwell, the year before me, he went to New Mexico. And then, so the coach in New Mexico is a guy called Joe Franklin, who's a great guy, but he's probably the laziest recruiter of all time. And his recruiting method is ask his current athletes, have you got any mates who are good at running? So he said that to Luke and was like, yeah, my friend Jake, he's all right. And then Luke was like, you should come here. And that was literally how it came about. I barely even spoke to Joe.
And what did you study out there?
I studied a master's in exercise science, which was really good fun. I did a master's in biochemistry for my undergraduate, which was a bit stressful and intense and quite full on. And then the Masters in Exercise Science was the topics that I was more interested in, and it was just in a more manageable workload. So it was a lot more enjoyable and very interesting.
You finished now and you're that you're intending to stay out in America?
I think so, yeah. So I'm definitely going to go back to Big Bear for next winter because I think the training setup's really good there. But I do also think that it possibly doesn't suit my personality to be a full-time athlete. So I think I'm going to apply for a PhD in America and possibly to some places in the UK based on where I think I'd have the best academic options. I'm not going to try and push the full-time athlete lifestyle for the next sort of 5-10 years. I think, yeah, I'd like to do something else as well.
Big Bear Truck Club, is that where Boris Berrien is?
Yeah, so I live with Boris and four other guys in a house in Big Bear most of the year. And the group was started by Brenda Martinez and her husband, Carlos Handler, who is all of our coach.
And Boris, he's big in the news at the moment because of this thing with Nike.
Yeah, he's gone massive in the news. It's a crazy situation. I've got Boris's back all the way. I think he's been being treated appallingly by Nike. And he hasn't done anything wrong as far as I can tell.
And it's due to go to court this week, isn't it?
Is something like, I think it's in the next 10 days or so, yeah.
What's the detail of it?
So last summer, Boris went from being an absolutely nobody to running 143.3 and 143.8. So he ran 143 twice last summer. Nike.
800.
Yeah, 800 metres. So he was ranked 5th in the world, I think, for the 2015 season. So obviously that's massive. And I think Nike, and when someone does that, they immediately try and snap them up on a contract. So he's younger than me. I think he's 22. And they signed him on a 6-month contract, or what he thought was a 6-month contract. But so in the fine print, it also said, we also have the right to match any offer that any company makes to you after 6 months. We have the right of first refusal. So December came round, the 6 months expired. He got lots of other offers from other shoe companies, and he didn't want to sign with Nike again, which I completely respect, and his reasons are completely respectable, like the fact that Nike sponsor Justin Gatlin and a lot of, and have, you know, stood by Maria Sharapova recently, and all these, you know, it's clearly, they clearly have this attitude towards drug cheats and former drug cheats, which Boris doesn't respect. So he wanted to leave, and so they basically tried to keep him against his will. They said that they matched his contract that New Balance offered him, but actually they didn't match it because they included these reduction clauses, which mean that if you're not ranked in the top 10 or some other performance criteria at the end of the season, then they can reduce your salary. So Boris says that that's clearly not a match, and Nike are trying to argue in court that there is a match, so he has to sign with them. So that's the current state of play. It's a very stressful time for him, I think, because, you know, he's trying to prepare for the Olympics, and he's going to have to show up in court, and I hope it's damaging Nike's reputation. I think it should be damaging Nike's reputation, because it's basically bullying tactics that they're using.
He's obviously training well.
He won the pre-classic, which was one of the best 800-metre fields that have been assembled. He won the pre-classic Nike's meet wearing New Balance gear. So I think they hated that, and they put out a temporary restraining order to prevent him from wearing New Balance gear in any competition.
So how long were you training with them?
So between sort of October and January, February, when I got the injury, I was training with that group. And it was really, really good fun. And it's a training system that I completely believe in. And it's worked absolute wonders for Boris and for Brenda and for some of the other guys. A guy who joined when I joined, a guy called Dusty Solis, and he's just run 3:39 and 147.1.
I was going to say, how would you summarise the system? Is there?
We live at 7,000 feet in Big Bear, and we drive down to sea level for all of our sessions. So it's a live high, train low system. So that's the one thing that sort of sets our group apart from other groups. The intensity is high. We do a lot of reps at sort of 5K race pace, which, like, for me, like, so I'll do mile reps at 66 seconds per 400 and K reps at like 2:45, whereas before I would have been doing sort of K reps at 3 minutes. But all through the winter, I'll run at 5K and 10K race pace. And then the other thing that's slightly different is that we do really hard, short tempo runs, so like between 2 and 4 miles at like 4:40 pace. So whereas before my tempo runs would always be like 5:15s, 5:25s, that kind of area. Now I do short tempo runs, as well as still keeping in the long tempo runs at 5:20-ish. So there's two different types of tempo run now.
And it's mainly focused on 5K, the training?
Yeah, that's my goal. I think that's probably my best distance. So But obviously the group is more 8:15 focused, so then I do end up doing some of the longer stuff alone.
Yeah.
But that's okay. We mix the sessions in so that they do 800 reps whilst I do K reps. And...
Well, you have been injured.
Yes. Unfortunately, I had, for the first time in my life, after 10-plus years of running, I got a stress fracture, which was a pretty traumatic experience all round. Like, and yeah. But, I mean, it's actually not so bad in the end. I stayed quite fit. And
how'd you do that?
I cycled and I swam and I aqua jogged. Those were my main ones. The cycling I couldn't do at first because even that I felt was putting pressure through my foot and I didn't want to delay the healing at all. So then I switched to swimming and I wasn't a very good swimmer a few months ago, but now I got to the point where I could swim for 40 minutes sort of constantly. So that was actually quite nice, you know, because with aqua jogging you don't really feel like you're making any progress. You're just sort of preventing yourself from losing fitness. But it was actually nice to sort of learn a new skill with swimming. So I actually quite enjoyed that.
But you're back to running now. When do you think your next race is going to be?
I think I'll race at the Oxford BMC on July 23rd, or potentially the new Saw Mile on the July the 20th. Mm. I'll have a go at one of those.
At the moment, you're building a bit of a reputation as a journalist, but it seems to have sprung up as a lot of a blog you wrote about. Is it Meldonium?
Meldonium, yeah.
Again, how did that come about?
I wrote the article before the Sharapova incident, and I wrote the article because Abebe Aregawi had tested positive for Meldonium. And, you know, with a background in science, I was quite kind of interested when I heard of this drug, Meldonium, which I'd never come across before. I had a bit of spare time. Like I said, I wasn't really running very much at that point. So I just decided to write a blog about what it was, what its effects are, who had been caught for it other than Aregawi. And at that point, there'd just been a couple of, like, cross-country skiers from Eastern Europe, and there really wasn't anything else on the internet about it. So then when Sharapova tested positive for it, it was the number one thing that came up on Google, and that's how it sort of took off. I expected about 10 of my slightly geeky Oxford friends with an interest in biochemistry to read it, and I think it ended up getting like 110,000 views and being the most read blog on WordPress for a couple of days. So it was completely bizarre. But yeah,
and you ended up being on national TV, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I was on Sky News and like BBC Radio and stuff. So it was a funny day.
And have you built on that? I saw an article in Let's Run recently previewing the Oslo.
Yeah, so a little bit, yeah. And I've the article also ended up being published in Outside Online magazine in America, and I got a little bit of money for that. And then Let's Run, I've written for them a couple of times. I know the guys from being out in America a little bit. But I would like to progress. I really enjoy writing about running and writing about anti-doping. I don't think there's a vast amount of money in journalism with everyone writing for free online now. Mm. But it's something that I enjoy doing anyway, so I will continue to try to develop it and progress it.
Touching on doping.
Yeah.
Very broad topic, but what do you think about the current state of the sport? For me, in grassroots athletics, kind of here in the UK, we never really come into contact with it.
No.
Do you think that will remain so? Do you think it's just an elite problem? Or do you think we more and more kind of recreational athletes, in the same way as cycling at the moment, there's a pattern of guys on the levels underneath the elite who are starting to dope and things. Do you think that will ever come to pass in the UK or America?
I think there's a chance. I hope it doesn't. I think the thing that with cycling is that it's much more technology-driven, and in cycling it seems like you can, to an extent, buy success with really good equipment and really fancy, expensive bikes. And so I think it's easier for that doping mentality to be extended to cycling, where they extend that idea of sort of purchasing success to medications and drugs. So I hope that the grassroots running stays with the attitude that I think it currently exists, where hard work pays off and... There's no alternative to hard training. But I mean, I think that ethos could change. I think that maybe we will see it infiltrating the grassroots athletics. You know, it needs to be discouraged in any way that it can be. And that's another, if I were to carry on journalism, I would be massively pushing an anti-doping agenda in every article that I write, because I think it's terrible.
And do you think it's pretty rife amongst elite level athletics?
I think I'm a natural optimist, I would say. I think there are certain nations where it's very rampant and rife. But I'm not one of those people who thinks that because Kenya doesn't have the most well-established anti-doping system, everyone in Kenya must be doping. Yeah. I think there are a lot of genuinely fantastically naturally gifted athletes from East Africa that are good because of loads of societal and physiological factors completely separate to doping. I don't think that all the top distance runners taking drugs, but there's clearly a problem. And I hope I haven't got my head buried in the sand. And I think that there are loads of athletes who are cheating, and I don't think there is the appetite at the top of the sport to really get to the bottom of the issues.
What's the attitude in America? I'm not sure it's as popular a sport over there as it maybe is in the UK. Do people care about sort of doping in sport? Is it a bigger scandal here, like the Salazar incident, the talk of Russia being disqualified for the Olympics? Is it drawing much interest over in America?
Not anywhere on the same level as it is in England. Like, when one of those scandals breaks in England, it's like front page news on the national newspapers. And that's not really the case in America.
Yeah.
I think within athletics there is still, you know, a desire to clean up the sport. And my group, the Big Bear Track Club, is massively anti-doping. And I think Brenda Martinez is one of the big advocates for clean sport and clean distance running in America. And I think I do also think that Travis Tiger, the head of USA Anti-Doping, is one of the people who's really working well from within inside the system to counteract doping. But in terms of the press coverage, it's nowhere near as big as it is in the UK.
Because this incident with Salazar seems to have completely fallen away. There's even the investigation has been dropped.
I don't think that USADA have officially announced that their investigation's finished. But I know what you're talking about. It does seem to be fizzling out, and there's been calls from the press to actually say if they have found nothing, they should announce that they found nothing. But yeah, it's an odd one. It's a very odd one. I'm not a big fan of the Salazar group, but if they are working within the rules of the sport, then I guess USADA should announce that they found they are working within the rules of the sport, rather than just leaving it sort of open-ended, because I don't think rumour and speculation is a good thing.
You were kind of ahead of the curve for the last kind of doping scandal with Sharapova. Mm-hmm. Is there anything kind of coming up you think is going to cause a controversy? Is there any particular drugs maybe, or maybe a nation that you feel is going to come up and be another scandal in the next 6 to 12 months?
I'm interested to see how all this stuff plays out with the Operation Puerto blood bags. You know, I don't know if you've seen that they've been released now, but there's different factors in the war. So I think the WADA statute of limitations is 10 years, and we've literally just passed 10 years since those blood bags were taken. So it seems fairly convenient that they've just now been released 10 years later. So it'll be interesting to see whether they do actually test them or whether WADA just says that's beyond our statute of limitations. But I think if the names were released from that case, that would be huge. And that's like another story that could be massive.
Because weren't footballers and
tennis players, there's supposed to be some very high-profile footballers, tennis players, but also very high-profile cyclists and runners and track athletes. So
it was amazing. I don't know how that they managed to get away with that, really. Were they going to burn them or just destroy them or something at one stage, the authorities?
They were, yeah. And there's been a big legal battle about it. I don't even know what the argument is for destroying those blood bags. So,
crazy.
Yeah, it is crazy. And it's just another illustration of the fact that the people who are doping have quite a lot of financial and legal backing sometimes and can get their way. And that's what's happened with Russia, isn't it? That, you know, that coming from the very top, the message is that doping is okay. So when you've got the backing of the Russian government, that is far more powerful than anything that WADA can do.
Yeah.
So they're going to get away with it.
And it's unlikely they're going to be disqualified, it looks at the moment, from the Olympics.
Yeah. I mean, I think it'd be an absolute joke if Russian track and field athletes are in the Olympics, especially because the thing that's really annoying me right now is that UK anti-doping took over the testing of Russian athletes for this winter, and there have been multiple reports that they've been unable to carry out that anti-doping program effectively. So essentially, the Russian athletes have had a whole winter untested to dope freely, and now they're going to be allowed back in by the looks of it. So actually the ban has helped them, because they haven't missed any major competitions, but the anti-doping program has been less than what it was in previous years. So if that does happen, then I think it's a bit, it's a joke.
On a lighter note, is there anything in this, obviously Rio's a couple of months down the line, is there anything particularly you're looking forward to in terms of the competition?
Do you know what? I'm really looking forward to the British Olympic 5,000 metre trials. I think it's going to be an absolute cracker. And I'm absolutely gutted I can't be part of it. But there are some people who are running really, really well, competing for the two spaces that are available after Mo Farah. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see how Tom Farrell, Andy Butchart, Johnny Davies, Ross Millington, Andy Vernon, how all those guys shape up against each other.
Like, any predictions?
So I lived with Ross Millington for a little bit in Albuquerque, and he's literally an Olympic trials expert. He won the Olympic trials 5,000 in 2012, and he won the Olympic trials 10,000 the other week in Highgate. So he's already qualified for Rio in the 10,000. If he does race again, I think I'd back him. Although obviously Farrell's he's sort of flown under the radar a little bit so far this season, but
yeah, I've not heard anything of him. Is he? He's competing out in the US at the moment.
He raced last night at Watford and looked very, very impressive.
Okay.
He ran 3:39. So it'll be, yeah, so it's going to be an interesting one. Loads of international competition that I'm looking forward to as well. I think Mo Farah against Jeffrey Kamworo in the 10K is going to be a real battle. So that'll be exciting as well.
And it'd be nice to see Bolt do the double over Gatlin again. That's always nice.
It'd be great, and I think Bolt's looking really good this year as well, actually, already.
Which is encouraging.
It is encouraging, yeah.
Excellent. Okay, and then I've got a final three questions.
Okay.
Which I'm going to ask everybody. The first one is, what is your favourite make and model of shoe or spike ever?
I'm incredibly picky about running shoes, and my favourite make and model is the Nike Pegasus 29 in a 4E extra wide. So I have... so they don't even...
That's specific, I like
very
it.
Specific. They don't even make it in the UK, so it's a bit of a nightmare. But yeah, that's my all-time favourite.
And do you have a recommended either read, watch or listen? So podcast or TV show, film or book?
Since this is a running podcast, I'll go with a running book. Charlie Spedding, From First to Last, is an absolutely great read and very inspiring.
His thing about his attitude to the race, he convinced himself that it was going to be the best day of his life, and he kept saying, this is going to be the greatest race I've ever run up to the Tokyo Olympics.
Yeah, really interesting sports psychology, isn't it?
Yeah. And the final thing is, the greatest running performance, in your opinion, of all time?
That's a tricky one. So, since I've been back home, I've been to watch live the World Half Marathon Championships in Cardiff, where I last saw you, and the London Marathon. And I actually think I might have seen the greatest ever half marathon performance and marathon performance in those two races. Because, you know, that Cardiff race was absolutely horrible conditions. And Kamworo still ran, what was it, 59 low something.
After falling over.
and running like a 4:10 first mile. And then and then Kipchoge again running, what, 2:03.0 something. Again, in not ideal conditions in London.
No.
So I would say one of those two performances. And also, since I witnessed them live, I'd go for one of those.
Though both those races I ran in, and both those races I had a bit of a tough time with the conditions.
Well, so exactly.
I can vouch for both of those being pretty difficult races to run quickly.
Yeah, and I know, for me personally, the marathon is just like the most staggering thing, what those guys do to run at that pace for that long. It's something that I can't even conceive of.
Excellent. Nice one, Jake. Good luck with those upcoming races.
Cheers.
Hopefully you run well at the mile, and hopefully speak to you soon.
Yeah, sure. I'll see you at the races. Cheers, Sean.